My name is Ed Goldberg, and I have the privilege of talking to Lori Notaro. Lori, welcome to KBOO and welcome to Portland.
Oh, thank you, Ed. I'm happy to be here.
Although you're from Eugene, so Portland is not that big a deal, right?
No, hour and a half, yeah, right. If you drive well.
If you fly low, yes.
Right.
Normally, I don't regurgitate something I found on the web about a writer, but in this case, I had to do this because you wrote this yourself. Lori Notaro was born in Brooklyn, New York, raised in Phoenix, Arizona. She packed her bags for Eugene, Oregon once she realized that since she was past 30, her mother could no longer report her as a teenage runaway. Took you that long, did it? She's the author of The Idiot Girls Action Adventure Club, Autobiography of a Fat Bride, I Love Everybody, We Thought You'd Be Prettier. Oh, that hurts, that one. An Idiot Girl's Christmas. She is currently at work on a Plan B to take effect when her book contract runs out. Which consists of options with minimum dander of office politics, including selling hot dogs at Costco, selling hot dogs from a street cart, selling hot dogs at high school football games, or being the stop sign holder for road construction crews. That's a good one. It keeps you outdoors. It's light work. She avoids raccoons both day and night and fully expects to be run out of her new hometown once this book is published. At press time, she is still married. Still true?
Still true.
Still true. Her cat is still alive. Mazel tov.
Dead.
Oh,
yeah.
Alas.
It's okay. It's okay.
Makes me feel bad.
18 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Well, on to the next
sorry.
One. That's all right. No, I'm going to tear up at myself. And you have an adorably disobedient dog named Maybe, named after the woman on the
Arrested
little girl
Development.
On Arrested
yeah.
Development,
uh-huh.
Yeah, who wears sweaters and loves chicken strips. Okay. You're here for your latest novel, Spooky Little Girl. Spooky Little Girl is published by Villard. And your name is spelled Notaro. Spooky Little Girl. There's a character in here named Lucy Fisher, and there was a real Lucy Fisher. Tell us about Lucy Fisher.
Well, the real Lucy Fisher came to me when I was sitting in a dentist chair. I mean, of all places, I was getting my teeth cleaned. And my dental hygienist, whose name is Jody, is a wonderful, wonderful technician who does not make me bleed, which the guys kind of make me doubt her prowess, because usually I'm just a fountain.
The medicine has to taste bad to be effective.
Right.
Is that what it is?
Exactly. But I was being a loudmouth, and I was being my typical talkative self. And she said, "Oh, you remind me of my friend Lucy Fisher." And I responded with, "Oh, well, either she must be on parole or she's in rehab."
Oh,
and
Christ.
So Jody said, "No, actually, she's dead." So that was my cue. Yes, exactly. That was my first cue. And I listened to it just to shut up and let her talk.
Mm-hmm.
And she went on to tell me how Lucy had been a friend of hers who came home from this Hawaiian vacation, which is also the same scenario in the book, to find all of her stuff thrown out on the front lawn of the home that she shared with her boyfriend. No explanation, no nothing. Then Lucy loses her job the following Monday and has no place to go. She has her options are completely in a matter of like 48 hours. She's just completely done for. So in real life, Lucy moved in with her sister, which was in a different state, into Ohio, I believe it was. And 2 days after she was there, Lucy's sister's car broke down. Lucy's sister asked to borrow Lucy's truck. And she gave it to her. So Lucy took the bus into town, and immediately stepping off the bus, she walked into the street and got hit by a semi-truck and was killed. But Lucy's sister had no idea how to get in touch with any of her friends back home that she had left at the dental practice and her friends, a place that she had lived for quite a while. And so these people just thought almost for a whole year that Lucy was just being really flaky and kind of her irresponsible self, and that wasn't the case at all. And finally, Jody, after a year, figured out that something was really wrong and Googled her and found her obituary. And that was a story, and it just struck me that given the right set of circumstances, any of us could fall through the cracks and just, disappear. I mean, and usually when people disappear, there's a husband who just brought home a wood chipper from, like, True Value or something. But that was not the case in this story. She just completely vanished into thin air. And it had a really sad ending.
This is, in effect, the setup for the entire plot for this novel, pretty
exactly.
much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the backstory.
That's the backstory,
right.
Yeah. A couple of things. First, it's definitely celebrated in song and literature. The idea of actually throwing your partner's everything they own out on the front lawn or down off a balcony from a high rise or something, does that actually ever happen?
It happened in this case. I certainly have thrown things out of doors, but then quickly realized my neighbors would see it and went out to gather all the evidence to bring them back inside.
Yes, but, no matter how mad you are, you don't want it to look bad in front of the neighbors. That's very funny. There's another thing. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but this is a ghost story, right? I'm not giving anything away to say
No. Okay. She dies right away.
Yeah, okay. So we'll talk about that. But you can't have help but notice the number of undead stalking the minds of America these days. There are vampire films.
Right.
There's a genre of literature called urban fantasy. Do you know what this is?
No, I don't. That sounds interesting.
Urban fantasy. It's werewolves, vampires, undead, and long dead of various kinds, sprites, fairies, demons, all this kind of stuff, stalking the streets of modern metropolitan cities and interacting with humans. In one way or another. What the hell's going on out here? What is occupying our mind that we need to be thinking about the undead?
Boy, I guess things are just so kind of crazy and escalated in our daily lives that seems like the next progression. That's maybe something that's a craziness that we don't encounter every day, so there's still something unique about it. I don't know what that would be. I've always been fascinated by ghosts since I was a little kid, so I certainly wasn't trying to tap into something like that, but I could see where this certainly fits into that genre. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I interviewed an author not long ago who also wrote a ghost story that was set in a cemetery in London, the one where Karl Marx is buried. And So people are, for some reason, I don't know, maybe it's because things are so horrible everywhere you look around you.
I think you're right. Yeah. That it's almost an escape, but it's almost a realistic escape to think that, oh, that's just the next step. That's the next level that we go to where who really knows what's beyond.
Well, it's also a very comforting thought to realize that it doesn't end when you croak.
True. In fantasy. Yeah. Sure. Certainly. Yeah.
Do you believe in the afterlife at all or?
You know, I mean, I was raised Catholic, and I was raised that if you're really, really good and you don't sin, which is completely impossible, then you go to heaven and you get to hang out with angels and Jesus and that kind of stuff. And I think that that's a really pretty picture, but I also really believe in science. So I kind of believe, honestly, that human beings are kind of no different than the green bean that's going to be on my plate for lunch. You know what I mean? What makes us so special? We have
DNA.
Well,
green beans don't eat us.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
That would be the only difference, as far as I can see.
Right, or prairie dogs, I guess, for the sake of that, or even a cow or a bear. Is there a bear heaven? Is there a prairie dog heaven? I don't know. So I'm not sure if I'm really willing to kind of lift myself up and above every other species on Earth just to have an afterlife. I mean, honestly, if there is an afterlife, rock on. I am so there. And if there's not, I won't know the difference. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, well, let's talk about the book. Again, the title of the book is Spooky Little Girl, which, of course, recurs to Lucy.
Right.
What's SD-1118?
Oh, SD-1118
If I give away too much, you can stop me, okay?
No. It's Sudden Death, Room 1118, and that's the classroom where Lucy goes in order to learn how to become a ghost and learn how to haunt and harness energy because she no longer has a physical body. She has she's a massive energy, and so she has to learn how to even bring in more energy to manifest herself and to move objects and complete the mission that she's been assigned to. And once she returns to Earth, to complete that successfully, and then she gets to move on to this eternal afterlife. So the ghost thing is not forever and ever. That's only you stay there if you don't succeed.
So there's two things here that interest me. One is the idea that we have a mission.
Right.
Okay. Which is, it's not religious per se, but it's spiritual in a way, isn't it, that we have to have a mission?
Right. And Lucy ends up in ghost school. Not everyone goes there. Some people go immediately to the state, which is the ultimate level that you want to achieve. But Lucy and the people in her class don't end up there because they've died suddenly and they haven't lived their lives to their, without being preachy, to their optimum. They're all kind of flaky, a little self-absorbed, a little bit too righteous. Each one has their own little perspective on why they didn't really make the final cut to eliminate this middle ground.
I love the chapter headings. You know, all the chapter headings are funny. But isn't it the one here, like, if I'm dead, why am I wearing underwear? Or
right. There's a hunter that tries to challenge, the teacher by saying, if I'm dead, why am I wearing underwear?
For everybody else's sake, probably. What a lovely ghost. The chapter headings are very funny. all through the book, and I have already read the books, and I'm kind of interested to go back and take a look at them. Some of them are essays and some of them are novels, or are they all essays?
I have two novels, and I think I have 6 or 7 nonfiction essay books.
What's the other novel?
The other novel is There's a Slight Chance I Might Be Going to Hell.
Okay.
And odd parallel.
Well, I presume that the other books also are chock-a-block full of snide throwaways, which are part of what made this book live for me.
That's great. That's great. I try. It's all supposed to have a humorous angle. So,
Carrot Top
scares the heck out of me, as he should everyone else. He's got a lady face. I don't know how that happened. I don't know why you would go in and get a lady face when you've got, oh, that crazy red hair. It's just, it's upsetting to look at him for me.
Well, you know, he falls into the prop comic realm. And all stand-up comics loathe prop comics, you know, starting with Gallagher. But for some reason, they hate Carrot Top even more. I don't know why that is.
Yeah, I know he's got his thing in Las Vegas. But yeah, that would be like seeing the leprechaun from the movie to me. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, completely terrifying.
Which, and of course, the glaring omission is Steve Martin, who was also a prop comic, and everybody loves him. So
right,
go figure.
Right. Well, he collects art, so it's better.
Okay. Tell us about your shout out to I Dream of Jeannie.
Oh,
the ashes in the urn.
There is, yes, and yes. You have to. that's very obscure,
it.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, when Lucy goes to her funeral, which is a part of their transition process in the sudden death training for these spirits/ghosts, each one has to go to their funeral to kind of get through the hump of realizing that they are no longer among the living. And so, when Lucy gets there, she realizes that everyone that she loved is not only there missing, but she is also missing. And she's looking around, and her sister cues the pastor to start the service, and Lucy just keeps thinking, where is my body? Where's my body? And until she realizes a collection of little ephemera and memorabilia up on a little countertop, which is pictures of Lucy in a bridesmaid outfit looking like one of like Connie Corleone's kind of bridesmaids. And like an I Dream of Jeannie bottle, which she realizes Lucy is indeed at her own funeral, but she's been shaked and baked.
Ooh, ouch. And the only other one I'm going to bring up is that.
I hope I know it.
Yeah, I know you're going to know this one. That the devil has taken time off because he has a contract with AM radio. Now, who might you have been referring to with that particular film?
Well, he thinks all the liberals just blew up that oil platform in the Gulf, so I think that's a pretty big hint.
Yeah. The Cave of Winds himself, Rush Limbaugh. That's very funny. I admire these little nasty throwaways because that's the way I live my life. Let's face it. You seem like one of the many children of Groucho Marx in a way. Do you know what I mean? With the aside. You know,
that's very nice. Thank you. That's one of the nicest compliments I've ever received.
It's one of the highest compliments I give. So,
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I owe you money for that now.
Well, send a check. Don't worry about it. Let me remind our listeners, I'm speaking with Lori Notaro, Notaro. The title of her book is Spooky Little Girl, and it's a paperback published by Villard. Speaking of funerals, so you know about Tom Sawyer's funeral. Right?
Oh, indeed. Indeed.
Well,
yes.
He fakes his own death, and then listens in at his own funeral, just loving the fact that all these people are saying such nice things about him when they beat him up and yelled at him when he was alive.
Right.
And of course, Lucy doesn't get any of that satisfaction.
No. And that was kind of when I was thinking about how to approach that scene, mm-hmm. and I certainly did have Tom Sawyer in mind. I didn't go back and read it. I read it in college. I didn't go back and read it because I didn't want to rip anything off from there, but I wanted that to kind of be kind of a basis, and not really satirize it, but kind of play off it a little bit. And yeah, Lucy does not get the eulogy that she is hoping to get. The pastor does not even know who she is and kind of plugs her name in just like it's a slot there on a page, you know, like.
I just went to a memorial service like that, so
yeah.
I've seen these things, yes.
Yeah.
The rabbi or the pastor or the priest has never met this person and has to stand there and say nice things about them. And usually
right.
They do it fairly well because they've done it 50 times already, so. They probably use the same speech. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's talk a little about some of the characters. Tell us about Martin.
Martin is, I've known a million Martins in my life, and he's a good guy that does a bad thing. And he does a bad thing because of his pride. And if he would have just stopped to ask one question or even merely queried Lucy on anything, the novel would have not gone forward. But he puts in place a series of events that ends in the ultimate tragedy, not only for her, but for him and everyone around them. So it's his pride that blocks him, and he's just kind of too stubborn and thinks he knows everything. He's not necessarily a bad guy, but in the end, he's not misunderstood either. He's a perfectly no-nonsense kind of guy, but he's just a little bit too... smug is a strong word.
Hasty.
But hasty for his own good, precisely.
Yeah. Jillian and Warren are friends of Lucy's, who they act throughout the novel to wondering where she is and why, you know, Jillian's her best friend, and why hasn't Lucy contacted them. These are good friends, the kind of friends anybody would want to have.
Right. Yeah. And actually, Jilly was based on my dental hygienist, Jody. Mm-hmm. And Jody is a very, you can just tell right away, she's a very kind person. So I based that character on her. And just as a fact, as an aside, last night when I was doing my reading in Eugene, naturally it's where I'm from, that's where Jody lives, she came to my reading, and before I went up and started, she said, I have something that I want to show you. And she pulled out two pictures of the real Lucy Fisher that I had never seen before. And it was amazing. It was, and she said, it was a whole picture of their dental office. And she said, now you pick out Lucy. And it was so easy to pick her out because she was flipping off the camera. And I went, right, I said, she's right there. There it is. But it was overwhelming to me because I have lived with this character for almost 3 years. And to finally see a picture of her was really just, it was very emotional for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, it must have had quite an emotional impact. So when you write your next book, is Jody going to say, am I in it?
I think she's probably had enough for this one, unless she's got another friend that has another tragic story. But I think I've poked her private life enough, you know?
Yeah, good for you. I got to ask about Nola.
I'm sure you've known a million Nolas as well.
I've known quite a few, and I'm very, very happy to say I've only known a few of them.
I've worked with a lot of them, and Nola, again, she is also a very headstrong person. She's Lucy's kind of arch nemesis, even though Lucy doesn't realize it. Nola's very aware of it. Nola is a very sensitive person in her own little private world. Like on weekends, she TiVos all of like the extreme makeover shows with they build homes for like little kids who don't have bones and give them bunk beds and crazy stuff like that that is completely irrational. And she cries at those shows. And she, the Ugly Duckling shows where the hideous woman gets a beautiful makeover and then catches the eye of the accountant in the office who's never looked at her before. You know, those very kind of shallow yet really superficial things that she relates to. She cries over those, yet in real life she's much like a feral dog that if you touch her she'll bite you. So she's very, very apprehensive, and she's had a very disappointing life, I think, but she's dealt with that in all the negative ways that you can. And she takes that and also puts her own tragedy in motion with Lucy's future.
Well, she's also a person who lives vicariously through other people's pain and joy.
Absolutely.
And in fact, she takes over Lucy's life when Lucy is gone.
She does, yeah, out of jealousy. And I tried to explore a lot about jealousy in this book because I think jealousy is such a powerful, just all-encompassing emotion, and almost it becomes an agenda, almost. So I wanted Nola to be a jealous person, but on the outside she seems very competent and very efficient, but on the inside she's a boiling pot of jealous lava.
Rage. talk about a rageaholic. One other character I got to ask you about is Nani.
I love Nani because she was based on my own grandmother, my Nana. My grandmother died right before I was writing this book, right before I began. So I had the idea for the book. I didn't have the character for Nani at that point, but I decided I kind of wanted to hang out with my Nana a little bit longer. So that's why I put her in, so I could hang out with her all day long. And certainly my Nana was very feisty like Nani is, and Nani is also a spirit who comes back to haunt with Lucy, almost like they're tag teaming it. Because she gets thrown out of the state the optimum state of heaven, if you will, for stalking other people, other celebrities that she loves. So yeah, Nani comes back and she's a spitfire. She's a real pistol, and she has a lot of energy that drives the middle chapters and the ending of that book.
Was your grandmother all country Italian, or was she born here?
She was born here, but both her mother and father were from Italy, and she spoke almost exclusively Italian until she was in high school in their house.
Yeah. It's like Mel Brooks saying that his grandmother could only speak Yiddish, and not much of that even. So
yeah.
I actually have a note here to ask you about Nola's TV choices, but
sorry.
No. It's good because you covered that real well. Some of the people that in Lucy's ghost class, and they have to learn ghost skills. Talk a little bit about that also. Are there for very strange reasons. Now, the greatest one was the implants. You want to tell us about that?
Well, you know, and I got a question about that last night, too, which was my first question on this whole tour, about how I thought of the ways that these other people died who are Lucy's classmates in her SD 1118 class. And I was a reporter for a long time for the Arizona Republic, which was the Metro Daily in Phoenix, Arizona. And so I was a commentator. So I commentated on weird news and pop culture and entertainment. And that actually was a true story. There was a woman in Denver who, this is probably 2000 or 2001, who was on a ski lift. It was very, very cold. And because her implants were inserted, whatever, what would you call them? Implanted, yes. That they froze while she was on a ski lift, causing her excruciating pain. And so I thought, wow, what would have happened if she had gone to, like, a bigger cup size, you know what I mean? And so that's how one of our fellow students in the classroom, that's how she meets her end, is she went a little overboard with her her bust area and ended up paying the price on a ski slope in Denver.
I think this book falls into the category of satire because you take all of your pet peeves and you explode them into absurdity, which is of course what satire is.
Right.
You're not very happy with the business of afterlife people either. The people who take advantage of others to communicate with the dead.
Oh well, I live in Eugene.
Say no more. You'll have to explain that. I mean, you really will have to explain that.
There, of course, there's always when. There's always a charlatan someplace, you know. There's always someone looking to cash in on something, especially when it comes to cashing in on someone's fears or cashing in on someone's hopes. You know what I mean? And certainly there is that character in this book who kind of comes in at Nola's insistence, and Nola, who is our villain, so to speak. And she takes advantage of Nola, who takes advantage of everyone else. So it's a very nice turn, I think, that Nola finally kind of gets a little bit ripped off. And I don't want to give too much away, but she does in her coterie, the fake psychic in her coterie of other ghost hunters does have a real person in there who's able to communicate with Lucy and Nani, which I think was it was a really fun scene to write. Mm-hmm. But in Eugene, I wouldn't say that I've run into a ton of fakes, but I think that there are people who kind of get a little carried away with just being extra sensitive, and certainly that's not exclusive to Eugene. They had them in Phoenix too.
They have them here too. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
There's always a woo-woo factor.
So yeah. And I think that maybe I'm just a little bit extra sensitive to it because I live there. I love Eugene, but there are those people there like they are here, and so the woo-woo kind of thing, which. You know, I'm not sure if ghost hunting could be a real science. If it actually was a real science, I think it would be fascinating. I'd go to graduate school for it because I find it so interesting. But I think that some people take it a little bit too woo-woo-y, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Everybody in the SD 1118 class is in the clothing they were in when they died.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have to be. I have somebody there is in scuba gear. So
right.
There's a ghost catalog. Describe the ghost catalog.
Right. Well, as I've been fascinated by ghosts and that kind of thing, like I said, for a long time. And after you read enough eyewitness reports or you hear enough stories, there's always the ethereal lady in white. Now, honestly, how many people die in white? You know what I mean? How many people die wearing these flowing white gowns? I mean, people get hit by cars every day, and I don't even own a white gown like that. So I wanted to play on that kind of thing. And there's always, you see the Victorian lady in black or the gladiator or a Roman soldier or the man in the big top hat. You always see these stereotypes. So I really wanted to play on that as far as the ghost catalog went, where you can stay in your own clothes if you want to, like Anne Boleyn chooses to stay in her own clothes, even though she carries her head around. But if you want to go for a more haunting kind of effect that makes you a little mysterious, you can go with the lady in white, or you can even go with the Rose character from Titanic. They have her dress too. So you can pick that out.
This is a remarkably hip for a ghost catalog. one more quick question. When the state itself, as described, is kind of relentlessly secular, at least the way we see it. It's you're not sitting playing harps and singing hosannas to the Lord for eternity. Why did you design it that way? And is it that way for everybody?
I think in my world it is kind of that way for everybody. I am a secular person, and I think that, without getting into too much of a religious thing, like I said, I was raised Catholic, and Catholics have their one version. Mormons have their version of heaven. You know, Muslims have their version of the afterlife or what eternity is. And I just wanted to wipe that away and just make it equal for everybody so that everybody could hang out and just have a good time no matter where you were. No one had to be segregated due to their religious beliefs, because I don't subscribe to those kinds of things. And I didn't want to endorse it. I didn't want to perpetuate it. I just wanted to create a really cool place where you could just go and nice people were nice. And if you wanted a bowl of brownie batter to eat, you could totally have that. If you want to eat a whole cheesecake, you can do that too. And you're just with people that you love in a really nice environment.
Places of the flesh with no recriminations.
Yeah.
Sounds like heaven to me. I've been speaking with Laurie Notaro, Notaro. The title of her book is Spooky Little Girl, published by Villard. It's a paperback. Thank you so much for driving to Portland to talk to us.
Oh, thank you, Ed. It was my pleasure to be here. I had a great time.